name is Kelly. Well, there's nothing original about that, I know. But I think I'm about the oldest now of a particular line of Kellys. I am getting old, very, very poor eyesight. Unfortunately, I'm a widower. Have a lot of spare time on me hands. Well, during this spare time, I often sit here in front of the fire, reminiscing to myself about the old days. Some say they were good old days. Well, I don't know whether they were or not when I look back on it. There was no 40-hour week. There was no 3 or 4 weeks holiday with pay. And fortunately, there were no strikes. But people worked a lot harder those days and got a lot less for it. Take the Laxey miners. They used to set off walking from Bouldrine and round there where I lived. Set off about 4:45 in the morning, walking to Laxey, hail, rain, wind, snow, or blow, to start their 6 o'clock shift. And the farmers, they worked in their fields and on their yards and all from dawn till dusk. They didn't go by the clock or anything like that, like happens now. And there was very little money about. Well, there was no finer sight than a farmer with a good swing plough and a good pair of horses, ploughing his furrow, straight as a gun barrel. But nowadays, they've got a tractor, banging along, making a noise, pulling about 3 furrows behind it, maybe 4, and every one was crooked to the dog's hind leg. And then there was the farmers cutting corn, a man handling a 3-horse team with a big binder, corn 4 or 5 feet high, and they went round and round that field from the time the corn was fit to cut. And there was no knocking off. Well, they knocked off for a bit of dinner, maybe, but in the afternoon, well, it'd be a closed basket of sandwiches brought out and a couple of buckets of tea. And, well, they clipped the feed bags on the 3 horses, and they sat down for a few minutes, ate their sandwiches, drank their tea, and then got on with it again. And behind the binder, the sheaves come and tumbling out. Half the farm women come behind, putting them into stooks. And they cracked on till you couldn't hardly see to do any more work. They must have been tired going home, but never any grumbles. They all seemed satisfied. And things went along very pleasantly. But looking back on, as I say, from adult's point of view, they couldn't have been good days. Not by any means. But looking back from a child's point of view, as I am doing, say from the age of 4 and a half or 5, when I think the memory starts to become retentive, there were good days. My word, we had long, hot, warm summers. We had snow in the winter. We could sledge down fields in Bouldrine that are now covered with bungalows, houses, all colours and descriptions. Our sledges were usually a couple of old battle staves with a box nailed on them. And then during the winter, we could always depend on getting ice on Garwick Lake and skating on it every winter. By word, that doesn't happen now. We may get the long summers, but they're not hot. And the winters are draggy, wet, but there's no snow and no ice like there used to be. I don't know what's happened to the season. But still, they went along very pleasantly for children in those days. We had plenty of good fun, and things moved at an easy pace. Well, in those days, we could race 3 abreast down Bouldrine Hill on bogies. Imagine doing that today, you'd be mangled to death with hundreds of motor cars as about. That's another thing, a motor car was a big event. We'd run across a field to see a motor car. But not to the old Manx people. The motor cars weren't a big event. They used to call them the Mull na Gearrtha, the Mill of the Devil, because they never saw anything faster on the road than the old threshing mill, belting along maybe on the flat at about 7 mile an hour and uphill at about 2, with black smoke belching from the funnel, towing the threshing mill behind the steam engine and maybe a press behind that again, traveling from farm to farm. But the sight of a Model T Ford throwing a up dust from the roads on a dry day and splashing up water from the puddles on a wet day and belting along at about 20 or 25 miles an hour, clattering and banging, that was almost an obscenity to the old Manx people. And it's these old Manx people I want to speak about, people I lived among. Real characters in their own right, every one of them. Characters and craftsmen. And they had no trouble doing anything. But there's two particular Manx people I want to speak about in particular. Because all the old Manx people, you know, had cures, charms, superstitions, and customs. But these two Manx people I want to speak about in particular first are Mrs. Robert Fale of Barouse Farm and my own grandfather, John Kelly, fisherman of Bildrine. Now these two, between them, I'm sure could cure anything under the sun. But of course there was no pills or thing, anything like that, like there is now. They cured people with natural things, herbs and things dug out of the hedgerows and all kinds of cures. Well, I'll talk of Mrs. Fale Barouse first. She did a cure on my own mother, long, long before I was born, of course. Mother was only 16 then. And she developed a bout of rheumatic fever. Was under several specialists in Liverpool a long time until she was about 17. And they gave her up. She could never walk again, they said. So she came to Barouse for a long holiday. Of course, in those days, all the farms, all the houses around Bildrine and Garwick took visitors in. It was a very popular place. People seemed to want a quiet country holiday those days, not the jangle and noise and discos and pop that goes on now. Times are changing, but I suppose it's progress. Anyway, to continue, my mother came in a bath chair, wheelchairs I think they call them now, maybe more posh, to Bildrine station. The hired man from the farm was there with the floating horse to meet her. Herself and bath chair and all were loaded into the float and up to Barouse. Now Barouse is a big farm, very level around the yard and street and the drive-in, and I suppose she could wheel herself about in the bath chair and in the sunshine that we used to get those days. Anyway, Mrs. Fale wasn't having this at all. Oh no. Every night before a roaring hot fire, probably peat those days too, I would think, she used to rub my mother from head to foot with goose grease and sulphur. Really rub it in till it was dry. And then there was an old flannel nightdress put on her. It was never washed, this nightdress, just put on her every night. And on her bed, between the sheet and the mattress, there was about an inch of dried tramman leaves. That's elder to anybody English that's listening. And on this she slept. Well, after about 3 or 4 weeks, she was pottering around the yard on a pair of crutches. And after 2 months, she was walking about with two sticks. And after 3 months, she was walking unaided. Shortly after this, she walked down to Bildrine station, which is a matter of must be a good mile, got on the electric car, and went on the boat to Liverpool, and walked off the boat. Her father was that pleased that he took her up to George Henry Lee's and bought her a new hat. So she told us anyway. I remember when I was years and years and years afterwards, I asked her what happened to the bath chair. She said, I don't know, it was left in the car chair at Barouse and nothing more was ever heard about it. I was after the wheels, of course, as a kid. But that was a cure Mrs. Fale worked, a natural cure, which specialists had not been able to do. Well, unfortunately, my mother's father was killed in a building accident 2 or 3 years later, and herself and her mother came to the Isle of Man to settle. I think she'd be about 20 then, she said. Well, later, of course, she met my father, and I suppose that's how I came along. Anyway, we're not going to that. But that was just one of the natural cures that Mrs. Fale worked, which, of course, I didn't see. But I was there at Barouse one day. It was the mill day. At least I'm saying the mill day, there was always 2, maybe 3 days thrashing at Barouse because it was a big farm, you know. But I used to love to go up there on mill day. The old steam engine going and 14 or 15 men round about all helping. Well, the farmers those days, you see, they sent a man to the mill to each other's farms. There was no paying wages, they just helped each other. Anyway, this particular day, the men had come out from their dinner and the fireman was stoking up his firebox and his foot slipped somewhere or other, maybe on a piece of coal or something by his bunker, and he fell forward. And the back of his hand caught the white-hot firebox. Oh, my word, it was a dreadful burn. You could hear him scream almost at Beldroyne Station. Well, Mrs. Fail got to Action Stations at once. Into the cows she went with a little shovel, came out with some fresh cow manure, put on a sheet of greaseproof paper. They got the man down off the engine, and she put the back of the man's hand where it was all burnt into this cow manure, wrapped it up with this greaseproof paper, wrapped it round and round. Then she got an old flour sack. The old white flour sacks, you remember them well enough before paper and plastic were invented. Clean, of course. And she bound the man's hand right from his wrist up and his fingers and all in, so it looked like he had a big boxing glove on. Well, in less than an hour, the pain had gone out of that man's hand. But, of course, he did no more work that day. But the next day, hand washed and cleaned off, scarred terrible, mind you. But no pain, just a light bandage put on it, an old glove. And he worked the rest of the time the mill was at Bruce. 2, maybe 3 days, and went off with the mill. And that was another natural cure that Mrs. Fail did. But I can't think of all the cures that I knew she had, but she had an awful lot. But one she did to myself, well, I don't know if it was a cure, but I think it was a charm, really. I remember being up there, I'd probably be maybe 6, and I was up there with my mother. Often went up there for a cup of tea in a rosy basin, as we called it, but I'll come to that presently. And I'd had a wart on the back of my right hand. I can know it as well as if it was yesterday. And I suppose as a kid I scratched it. It bled. And before long the back of my hand was covered with these tiny warts. Well, Mrs. Fail noticed them. Anyway, out she went to the Hackett and came in with a handful of straw, straightened it all out there, so she had a nice little sheaf of straw about, oh, diameter of 5 shilling piece of those days. Then she got some leaves. I don't know what they were, really. They could have been tramming, they could have been sycamore, they could have been beets, they could have been anything. As a kid, you're not interested in those kind of things, you know. She wrapped these round this straw, and then she got a big pair of scissors and cut one end of it off even. Turned it round, cut the other end off even, about 4 or 5 inches long. Then she put my hand on the table, back upwards of course, rested this end of the straw on top of it, put her hand on top of the other end, pressed down on it lightly, said something in Manx. It was a charm, no doubt about it, I wish I knew it. And then she took the little cylinder of straw to the fire, said something over it in Manx again and threw it in the fire. Well, in about 3 or 4 days, those warts were gone. That was another cure. Well, sprains and bruises and things like that, they were no trouble at all. She just went out and dug somewhere out of the hedgerow, maybe foxglove root, or anything like that, yarrow, wild garlic, boiled it up, chopped it up, and then boiled it up and simmered it and simmered it and simmered it till the water was nearly all gone. And then made it into a poultice and slapped it on the bruise or sprain or whatever you had. And in a day or so, it was gone completely. Well, of course, you had to have cures those days because the nearest doctor was in Laxey. That was 2.5 miles away from the village. Well, it was another mile down to the village and there was only one telephone in the village. That was Laxey 7, if I remember the number rightly, and I think I do. It was at the post office anyway. And the doctor then would have to come in a pony and trap. Well, it might be 3 or 4 hours before you got the doctor up. So they had to have their own cures. I meant to mention at the beginning of this tape that there's none of some script, you know. Well, in fact, I can't see you read a script. So don't expect the continuity that the BBC or even Manx Radio can give you. You'll just have to bear with me if I jump the gun a bit. For example, I meant to mention after talking about the cure that Mrs. Fair exercised on my mother, that my mother lived to the ripe old age of 92. 72 years and spent in the Isle of Man. And she lived a fine, healthy life, right up to the last. Except at 91, she had the darn cheek to complain she had a bit of rheumatism in her fingers. So, if I do jump the gun or don't get the continuity you expect, bear with me. And if you're not interested, of course, switch off. Well, having made that clear, we'll go on now with a few cures that old Johnny, my grandfather, had. I shouldn't say old Johnny, really, it's a bit disrespectful, but that's what the youngsters in Bullryan used to call him. Well, we'll carry on with the cures, we'll come to the charms and superstitions, etc. later on. Now then, we'll start with cuts. A bad cut on the hand. Well, he'd get a cobweb out of the rafters of an old barn or a loft or something, slammed on the cut, and put a bandage around it, and the cut would cure itself in a day or two. Another thing was, for a septic cut, he'd scrape the mould off the back of cheese. Of course, cheese those days was real cheese, not this stuff done up in tinfoil and polythene and plastic and stuff. There was a big cheese on the counter of the grocer's shop, and he cut it with a wire. Was a big rind on the back of it that accumulated quite a lot of mould. He'd scrape that into a cut and put a bandage on it. It would clear up the septic or blood poison or whatever was there. Another thing he'd do was open a pot of jam. Now in those days the country people made their own jam, and as I said before, there was no plastic or polythene covers or anything like that. They'd let the jam cool about half an inch down in the jar, and then they'd drop a little circle of greaseproof paper over it, then a sticky paper cover around it. Well, on top of this greaseproof paper, mould used to accumulate. Well, a badly infected cut, I've seen him open a pot of jam, sterilise his penknife in some boiling water, then scrape the mould gently off the greaseproof paper and work it into the cut and bandage it. Well, it would clear again just the same. There'd be no the blood poison, no septic or anything in the cut. Well, they always tell us that penicillin is made from mould, so this must have been a form of penicillin in those days. Another cure he did was on my own dear wife. It's many years ago now, of course. Piece over 40. Well, it was just after our daughter was born. The wife developed a big brown patch on her chin. Not a ringworm, anything like that, just a nasty coloured brown patch. She was very sensitive over it. It was about as big as a 2-bob piece, or I should say now a 10-penny piece, because there may be youngsters listening to this that don't know what a 2-bob piece was. Anyway, when Dorothy was about 3 or 4 weeks old, we decided she'd better go up and be shown to the great-grandparents, because he's very proud of the line of Kellys, you know, and she was the fourth generation of the Kelly Patines. So anyway, we were living in the Grange at the time, he was living in Bullryan. We bundled them all into the sidecar one Sunday and off we went. Well, he's pleased to see us, of course, and so was my grandmother. After doing his usual tests on Dorothy, putting his little finger in hers to see in her hand, to see if she clutched it, and then flicking his fingers to see if she'd follow his, you know, his eyes, I'm getting a bit mixed up there, I think, if she'd follow him round with her eyes and making a noise to see if she'd turn her head, all satisfied with that. Well, then he turned to the wife and he says, big deep voice, of course, "What's up with your chin, girl?" "I don't know, Grandfather Kelly," he says, "it's only come on since Dorothy was born." "What are you doing about it?" "Well, I'm going to the doctor." She was visiting a doctor in the town at the time, 5-bob a visit. "Is it getting no better?" "No, not a bit," she said. Then he turned to me, "Where are you working, boy?" So I said, "At the moment we're working in Laxey." "Well," he said, "let's see, it's Sunday today. Call here Tuesday on your way back from work. I'll have something ready for her. So I... Fair enough, Tuesday, I turned the old sidecar out for up all dry and rode up to the cottage, and he had a little paste of some sort made in his old Zambuck tin, cleaned out, mind you. Just a little brown paste, a nice herby smell of it. And he says, there you are, tell her to put that on before she goes to bed and put a bit of lint or cloth over to save it staying in the pillow slips. Right, fair enough, Tuesday night it was lashed on. Wednesday night it was put on again. Thursday night it was put on, the spot was getting smaller. Friday night there was hardly any spot at all. And by Saturday there wasn't a blemish there. Never was after that. So he did then with some herbal remedy what the doctors couldn't do with pills and things like that. Anyway, I'm just trying to remember what age man he'd be. He must have been 80 then, close on 80 anyway. And yet his mind was as alert as a man of half his age. Just listen to the playback there. I notice I mentioned the Kellypad hounds. Well, perhaps I'd better explain that before I go any further. Well, in London, there were scores of Kellys. My word, a load of them there was. And 90% of them had nicknames. There was all that to start with the Kellypad hounds. There was Kelly Sheeper, Kelly Rocklands, Kelly Big Day, Kelly Old Chapel. And the farmers of the Kellys, farmers were all known by their farm names, like Kelly the Ray, Kelly Ballaskerrow, Kelly Buldrama, Kelly Ballacragan, Kelly Clayhead. Oh my word, I could go on for hours about them. And having cleared that up, perhaps we'd better continue. But there's one more little point I want to make. I might be given the impression on this tape that it was only my grandfather and Mrs. Fail that had these cures. Oh, far from it. All the Banks people had cures. All the farmers and all. Oh, fancy, as I said before, getting a doctor from an isolated farm like Ballyvaran or Injagan or anywhere like that. Ballykillia. Miles from anywhere. It would be impossible practically to get a doctor within half a day nearly. I will go on with a few of the cures that I can remember. I'll generalise on these because, as I said before, all the people knew them and had them. Well, we'll start off with a very painful thing, styes. There were two methods of curing these, you know. One was by the rather brutal process of pulling the eyelash out. The sty was through with a pair of tweezers, but that was pretty hard going for lots of people. But there was a couple of potions made up for poultices. McGranth and Mrs. Fail both differed on these, but the results were just the same. Mrs. Fail always used celandine root, the buttercup, you know. Chopped up fine, washed first, of course, chopped up fine and simmered and simmered and simmered, and then made into a poultice and put on the eye before you go to bed and held in place with a bit of sticky tape. But my grandpa always used the wild forget-me-not, I think it's called. We used to call it bright eye. You know the thing well enough, a little blue flower with a white centre. He used the roots of that, by the same method, of course. And both these methods worked, always. The sty was gone in a day or so. Pain was gone out almost immediately. Boils were another very painful thing, but there were two or three methods of dealing with these. There was one very, very painful to start with, and only a strong man or woman could stand it. They'd fill a pint bottle with hot water, hot as it could, you know, go without breaking the bottle, tip the water out suddenly, then clap the neck of the bottle right over the boil, and the vacuum in the bottle would draw it out. But I believe it was awful painful. But another way was a poultice with lichen. I'll speak about lichen presently. They used to just make a poultice of that and put that on. That seemed to draw it out. But one method, which I saw used by the daughter-in-law of Mrs. Robert Fail, also Mrs. Robert Fail of the Grange Farm, mother of one of my best friends. This was a real old Manx remedy. Well, as I said before, visitors in those days used to come to the farms for a holiday. Well, this man came, I think his name was MacDonald. And himself and his wife. And, oh, my word, he had boils all over him. Couldn't hardly lie down with them. Going to be a very painful holiday. And he'd come for about a fortnight. Anyway, Mrs. Fail, every morning before he had anything to eat, she used to get a tumbler of milk. Not pasteurized or all this messing about they have with it now. And then get a teaspoonful of soot out of the chimney. Of course, it was in the old Black Bess grates in those days, you know. And put in the milk and stir it up. And he had to drink this before he had anything else to eat. It must have been pretty foul to drink, but anyway, Mr. MacDonald got it down all right, and in under a week, every boil had gone out of his body, and he had a perfect holdy. I saw that method used, as I say, by Mrs. Fail of the Grange Farm. Lichen was a thing that was used quite extensively. Well, strange it may seem, 2 or 3 years back, I was listening to a scientific talk on the radio. And this professor was saying that the ancient Egyptians used it. Quite a lot. Of course, that must be many, many thousands of years ago. And of recent years, the English scientists had discovered quite a powerful antibiotic in it. Well, I could tell this fellow that the ancient Egyptians must have been using it before the Manx people, of course. But the Manx people were using it before the word antibiotics was invented. Now, as I said before, it was one of the poultices for boils. But unlike the other things, they didn't simmer it and simmer it and simmer it till it was, you know, all the water gone. They just put it in a pan, brought it to the boil, and took it off the fire right away. Well, it was left to cool down, and then the water was sieved of it. Well, this water wasn't thrown away. It was kept and used as a gargle. It was bottled, of course, if they didn't want it at the time. Used it as a gargle, and a good gargle it was, too, for sore throats or tonsillitis or anything like that. And another thing they used it for was whitlows. That's the thing you never hear of now. They used to use it dry for that. Just plaster it round the finger with an old glove or a bit of cloth or something like that, and leave it on, and in a couple of days the whitlow was drawn out. There's another thing for whitlows, whitlow grass they called it. I couldn't identify it now because I couldn't see it properly. But they used to use that too, and just wind that round the finger and put a bandage or an old glove finger over it. And that seemed to draw the whitlow out. Another thing they used lichen for, or lichen as some people call it, but I'll still call it lichen, was a bronchial chest. They used to get a piece of flannel or cloth, more about 8 or 9 inches square, lay some dry lichen all over it, put another piece on top of it, and sew the edges up till you had a little sashie made of with lichen inside it. Well, then they'd put a few homeward bound stitches backward and forward across it to stop the lichen moving, and this would be pinned across your chest, pinned to your vest, not to your chest, of course, and left there. And in a few days, it seemed to draw the bronchial effects out of your chest. Well, now for bronchitis, of course, they give you antibiotic pills. So it must have been something like the same antibiotic that was in the lichen they used. Be hearing a few background noise on this tape, but of course I haven't got a soundproof studio. I had to switch off then because the clock was going to strike 9 and you thought it was Big Ben you'll listen to. The fire's crackling a bit and there's the occasional motor car going by, so you'll just have to take those noises as they come. But I was going to go on then with the cough mixture they used to make up. This was in preparation for the winter. There was an awful lot of stuff in it, I don't think I can remember it all, but I know there was wild garlic, there was colt's foot, there was molasses or black treacle, brown sugar, honey, and the honey was better if you could get from a wild bee's nest, the old bumblebee, you know. I know if I found a wild bee's nest and I told my grandfather I always got a penny for it, and he went out with a butter muzzle over his head and all and used to take the honey out of that. And also in this mixture there was larch cones. I used to be sent out, in the early springtime this was, to gather a pint can of larch cones. that just before, you know, before they'd opened. Now, this mixture, there may have been some other things in it as well, was all put together and boiled and boiled and boiled. About half a gallon of it, I suppose. Well, when it was supposed to be cooked, I suppose, or done, as they'd call it, it was all sieved very carefully through very, very fine cloth into a big bowl, allowed to cool down, and then it was bottled in preparation for the winter. I made 4 or 5 pints of it. My word, a good cough mixture it was, too. I've had many a dose of it. And it didn't taste too bad. Not so bad as some of the things they give you now. Of course, they oughtn't give you pills now, whatever you go for. In fact, I don't think you need to be a chemist now, as long as you can count, because every prescription you get from the doctor is just pills. But that cough mixture was always made up in the springtime. Well, about May, I would say. May is when everything was in full flush of bloom. The coltsfoot and the wild garlic and all that. And the larch is just starting to open. It was very